and welcome to the Week Junior Show. This week, we'll be finding out how people have been helping survivors of the earthquake in Turkey and Syria, discovering about some secret letters that have taken 400 years to decode, and wondering what goes on in a pigeon's mind. So to tell us all about these stories and more, of course, we're joined by two of the team from the magazine. We've got acting editor Vanessa and Week Junior writer Fred. So first of all, guys, of course, a big welcome to the show to all of our listeners and our readers. We've got the question of the week to kickstart, and today we're talking breakfast. In this week's magazine, you can read about how cereal started out as a rather strange new health food to cure tummy troubles, and it ended up changing breakfast forever. So I wanted to know, what's your favourite cereal, and was it the same when you were little as well? So I'll start off. My favourite cereal now is Cocoa Pops, and it has been Cocoa Pops since the day I was born. I love Cocoa Pops so much. I adore them. I love chocolate. And if I can eat chocolate for breakfast in any form, I will. So yeah, I'm taking it. Vanessa, I can hear the disgust in your voice. What's your favourite?
Slightly. So presumably you have your Cocoa Pops and then you brush your teeth. You don't brush your teeth first and then have the Cocoa Pops.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Just checking. But even so, gosh, that's a... Oh, I think I'd feel a bit Ichabobs if I had chocolate for breakfast.
Oh my God. No, I can eat... If somebody had made a cereal of pure chocolate chunks, I would happily eat that. But apparently that's not allowed. Vanessa, what's your favourite?
Well, I think probably when I was little, it was probably Frosties. But I've always really loved grape nuts. I'm not sure if you're familiar with grape nuts. Have you tried them?
Sounds too healthy for my liking, Vanessa.
They are super crunchy. But anyway, when I was little, well, wasn't that little, I decided to experiment. And I thought, just because everyone says you should eat cereal with milk, maybe you could try them with orange squash. And I tried that with grape nuts. And I can confirm now, absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. But looking back on it now, it's only when I was thinking about this question that I was thinking, I think this set me up, showed that I was right for the Week Junior, because I was curious and I wanted to know about things and I wanted to know about the world by experimenting. So anyway, big fat failure of an experiment, grape nuts and orange squash.
I mean, I could have told you that, Vanessa. They didn't have to experiment. I would have happily given you that information. Fred, tell me you haven't put orange juice in cereal, have you?
No, I mean, that sounds absolutely disgusting to
me. Where were you both when I needed you?
I did once try cereal with water in an attempt to cut down on milk, but I can tell you that also is absolutely revolting. So don't try that one. But I think I'm Team Bex on this one. Sugary cereals all the way for me, or at least it used to be. Do you remember Golden Nuggets? I think they were my favourite.
I've never had Golden Nuggets, but I used to see the ads and I really wanted some, but my mum wouldn't buy them for me.
Ah, that's advertising.
Yeah, it is.
All right, so I'm definitely more heavily leaning towards Fred's choices than Vanessa's choices. I'm not going to lie here. But that's fine. We're a team. Everybody has different opinions. Now let's get on to the very latest issue of the Week, Julia. To tell us more about the cover and the story behind it, we've got Vanessa. So Vanessa, tell us a little bit about this cover.
This was a really important story this week. We felt it was sort of the main story, the earthquake in Turkey and Syria. We covered it last week. It had just happened when we went to press last week. But now we wanted to move the story on and talk more about the rescuing the survivors and supporting the survivors. And it's difficult to find a picture for that. So we went with rescue workers, a team of rescue workers. And in the background, we wanted to show there's a picture of a building that's just at a really awkward, strange angle. And we felt this really summed up the story, that something bad had happened, but people were helping.
It's a really important story to cover. And like you say, I guess we'll be hearing more about it later in the podcast. Thanks, Vanessa. Now it's time for our real or rubbish. This is the part of the show where one of the team tries to trick me. I'm going to hear a story. I have to guess whether it's true or false. And I believe, Fred, it's your turn today.
It is, yes. And I think this one is really tricky, actually. But it involves a humble pigeon. Okay. Now, I'm sure you might have heard of the phrase bird brain, which refers to someone who's perhaps not all that with it. And the phrase is actually, it comes from pigeons, because we've always thought, or people have thought for many years, that pigeons are perhaps not the smartest animal in the animal kingdom. However, I pose to you, Bex, do pigeons really think like robots? Well, a new study suggests that pigeons' brains work very similar to artificial intelligence, also known as AI. So a team of researchers set up a test where pigeons needed to peck certain shapes. And if they picked the right shape, they got a reward in the form of some food. And they found the most incredible results, that birds, they didn't bother trying to spot a pattern, which would involve complex thinking, the kind of thing that us humans are quite good at. Instead, they just remembered which shapes worked. And got better and better, and presumably got fatter and fatter as the test went on. So, Bex, do pigeons really think like robots?
Oh my goodness, a robot pigeon would be kind of scary and terrifying, but kind of awesome. Now, pigeons are very close to home for me. My uncle races them. He keeps a loft, which is like a big outdoor shed full of pigeons. And I often go visit him and I look at the pigeons and I don't think they look that clever. I'm not going to lie to you, Fred. I can't imagine... his pigeons are that intelligent, but they do fly massive distances. When I was a kid, we used to be given big baskets, wicker baskets of pigeons, and we'd drive away and we'd have to let them out and they'd fly back home. And I genuinely thought when I was a kid that when you go on holiday, you take a basket of pigeons with you, because that's just how it worked. It would be like, you know, you take, you know, your pajamas, your toothbrush, your pigeons. That was just like the general rule of thumb. It wasn't until I was about 12 I realised that was just my family carrying pigeons.
Can I just ask, are these properly trained pigeons?
Yeah.
Okay, so, right, I'm just thinking where this kind of ties in with the can they think like robots. So these have been trained. They don't work out, they don't read a map or anything.
I hope, well, if, maybe they do, but we'll never know because they're travelling many distances. The thing about my point is, I think pigeons are very clever. I think they're really amazing. I know I read a book recently, in World War II they were used to send messages and they're incredible. But I also don't think they think like robots. I don't know whether I trust that a pigeon has the same capacity and thought process as AI. That's my stumbling block here, because I believe in pigeons, but you're telling me, Fred, that there's a robotic element to them.
Or am I?
Oh man, you're good at this one. You're good at real rubbish. Yeah, this is really tricky, because I felt when you mentioned pigeons, I was like, well, I'm gonna know this because I've got an affinity with pigeons, but I don't think I do.
Well, I think if anyone is the right person to answer this question, it's definitely you, Beck, so no pressure.
Yeah, thanks for that, Fred. Cheers. I'm going to have to think about this. Do I think pigeons feel like robots? Sadly, I can't message my uncle, which is a shame, because I reckon he would give me a very good answer. And I know that whatever I say will disappoint him, so that's something else to think about. So I will try and figure that out. While I do that, I should say, if you ever want to get in touch with us, you can, of course. You could email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, or you could leave us a voice note at funkidslive.com/theweekjunior and look for that big old red button there. Just grab a grown-up, record your voice, and send it in to us. So now it's time for our two top stories from the week. Fred, what was your must-read from the magazine?
So the story that's really grabbed my attention this week is the earthquake aid story, which, as Vanessa mentioned earlier, is our cover story. And of course, there was a horrible natural disaster, a 7.8 magnitude earthquake in Turkey and Syria. But out of the rubble of the disaster, teams of people have been working incredibly hard to provide aid and to the survivors and to rescue people who had possibly been trapped. And I suppose what might have got lost really in the last couple of weeks of news, or the last week of news, is the incredible effort by ordinary people out in Turkey, out in Syria, in the worst affected areas, who in the minutes, the hours and the days immediately after the earthquake rushed to help other people. And, you know, often people that they didn't know, they put themselves in danger to help their fellow humans, which is incredibly heartwarming. And these weren't just rescue professionals. Of course, there were, you know, firefighters and emergency responders. But these were also just normal people who thought that they could help. And there's no doubt that they've saved hundreds, if not thousands, of lives as a result. And then the British people as well have really helped as well. There's been a huge fundraising drive to provide not just money, but, you know, medical supplies, food, shelter, to the people in Turkey and Syria. And in fact, I think I'm right in saying that the British people have raised over £60 million, which is a fantastic achievement and is going to go a long way to helping people affected by this awful natural disaster.
Oh my goodness, wow. Thank you so much for telling us all about that, Fred. All right, Vanessa, what was your pick of the week?
Well, I love a code-cracking story. So that's what I'm going to go for. It's on. You'll find it on page 14 of this week's issue, on our science and tech page. And it's about Mary, Queen of Scots, and some letters that she wrote. And Mary, Queen of Scots, as you well know, was Queen Elizabeth I's cousin. And she had a strong claim on the throne, but she was Catholic, whereas the Queen of England was Protestant at that point, and she had very close connections to the French. So she all adds up to a big threat to Elizabeth. And she was kept in prison for a long time. Queen Elizabeth kept her in prison for a long time. And they have found some letters written by her, which have been lost for 400 years. And it's very odd to find stuff, to find that kind of material, because she's so famous. You'd think that people would sort of hang on to it and revere it. But the code in which they were written was so strong, they just couldn't work out what these documents were about.
I love this story. So tell me, where have all these documents been for all this time?
Well, they were in a bundle in the National Library of France in Paris. And because nobody knew anything, couldn't even work out what language they were written in, they were in this folder marked sort of Italian affairs. So they just thought it was about Italian politics and just got ignored for centuries, which is incredible. Anyway, the code is so complicated, apparently, because each symbol could mean more than one letter of the alphabet. So they got these code breakers, and they all had different day jobs. So one was a pianist and music professor. So they would work on this stuff. This team of people would be working on the stuff in the evenings. And first of all, they found out the letters were written in French. Then they found out they were written by a woman, because of some of the words she used were in a kind of feminine form, which we tried to explain this in the magazine, but it was too difficult. Because French uses feminine forms of certain words, they could tell that the author was a woman. And they found out that it was Mary, because she used keywords like Walsingham, which is the name of the spy master who organised all the kind of spy networks for Queen Elizabeth I. And so that's how they realised who these letters were from.
This is incredible. I also like to know that if you want to keep anything hidden, just put it in a folder marked Italian Affairs, and then no one's ever going to look.
And hide it in the National Library in France. It could be there for 400 or 500 years.
I'm going to write my diary.
Makes you wonder what kind of treasures. I mean, just all these dusty treasures. And they've got so much in these archives that it's only because researchers go in and start kind of, you know, painstakingly going through stuff. There could be loads of stuff hidden in there.
Just one librarian who's been very bad at their job and misfiled everything. You don't know what they've...
We've all had bad days and just thought, oh, I'll just hide it under here.
Oh my goodness, I need to go back to the library and check stuff out. Now, in the meantime, we've got to go over to the big debate. Japan, about 30% of the entire country's population lives in or near Tokyo. That's the capital city. To try and spread people out a little bit, the government is offering families some money, nearly £7,000 per child, to move to the countryside. So experts think that by the year 2050, 70% of the people on Earth will live in cities. But can the cities cope with all those people? Is it a good idea for people to move out? Or is that unfair on the countryside communities, which suddenly have to deal with a lot of new people moving in? So that's the question this week. Should people move to the countryside? Now, of course, you know this if you're a listener, you may know already. Each of our, I was going to say entrants, but each of our, you know, team here.
Gladiators.
Gladiators to enter the arena have 60 seconds to make their case. I assume, guys, that you have a clock near you. But if you don't, of course, I'll provide my massive clock here. Here we go.
Yes.
So Vanessa, you're going to go first to give us your side of the debate. So whenever you're ready, take it away.
Okay. Well, thank you, Bex. I'm glad to see your clock of terror. I definitely need it. I love the countryside. I think living there, you're nearer to nature just because of the countryside around you, but it's much easier to have a garden and you can grow things, grow plants, grow vegetables, grow flowers, which I love. It's easier to go for walks and for bike rides, because if you live in a city, you sort of have to leave the city before you can even start your walk. think as well in the countryside, you sort of get to know your neighbours and you bump into people you know much more easily, which doesn't really happen in cities. There, when you live in a city, you kind of have to make arrangements to meet people. So you have to arrange proper play dates. It's more relaxed and easygoing, I think, in the countryside. Everything just seems calmer. Also, cities are so big, I don't think they seem to work very well. It takes ages to travel across them. So yeah, country's just nicer.
All right, lovely. Well under a minute there. But does Fred agree with you? I suspect not. So Fred, whenever you're ready, tell us your side of the argument.
Well, I don't think everyone should move to the countryside, because what makes the countryside so special is that everybody hasn't moved there. And as soon as you do get thousands, possibly, people moving to the countryside, then it's going to spoil some of our beautiful views, our nature, our farmland, with new houses, which is not what we want for our countryside. We want it to be a special place where we can go to escape. But on top of that, they're cities for a reason. These are the pinnacle of what humans can achieve. These are where people come to work. These are where communities spring up. These are where the greatest museums in the world are, where the best theatres are. And we should be celebrating these places as the triumphant success of our species. And it's also just easier to be cared for in cities when you might need it, and also to care for others.
Oh my goodness. I mean, that was like a rallying call to action there, Fred.
I know this is an intellectual exercise and we're not supposed to take sides, but I kind of believe Fred.
I mean, he was a very convincing speaker
there.
Very
convincing.
Well, I kind of believed you, Vanessa. So,
you see, we're great. We're these great minds. We're so persuasive, both of us. We don't know.
I'm very conflicted on this one, because I'm in the countryside right now, but also I spend a lot of my time in the city. So, I mean, this is quite tricky for me. So I want to know what the listeners think. If you're listening and you know exactly who you believe the most, Vanessa or Fred, tell us right now. Send your opinion to theweekjunior.co.uk/polls or record a voice note for us at funkidslive.com/theweekjunior. Last episode, our big debate was all about whether grown-ups should shout on the sidelines. That's a bit of a tongue twister, by the way, at youth sporting events. So Fred, what were the results?
So the results are in, and I'm afraid it was a bit of a landslide. 428 people voted, but just 37% of people said it was acceptable and they didn't mind being howled at by their parents on the sidelines. And 63% of people said, no, it's not nice, and it's actually a bit of a distraction.
All right, then. And Vanessa, what did our readers have to say about this?
Well, we've had some great comments in, and I really hope the grown-ups are listening and paying attention. Here's what William had to say.
Hello, Week Junior, and today I want to share my thoughts about the big debate. I don't think that people should shout at youth matches because the children are still learning how to play and might not be that good. And also, it might put way more pressure on the children.
And Thora had some great ideas too.
No, I don't think it's okay for adults or people at sporting events to shout mean things at people on the pitch. I think this because you may be trying to give advice and encouragement to someone you like, if you're cheering them on, but they may not take it that way and it might not be good for your relationship.
Oh my goodness, I didn't think about damaging the relationship with your parents. That's quite a big concept there. Wow.
It's much more hefty. You see, nobody ever cheered me a lot. I was not, well, we've covered this in previous podcasts. I was not a sporty child. I think my parents would have kept very quiet at sports days and possibly wandered away.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's a whole other issue we need to talk about, Vanessa.
Yes. Wounded, so I am. Wounded.
We've heard from some of our listeners. But Fred, what did some of our readers have to say as well?
Yeah, thank you all for writing in. One person said, I think it is fair to shout because their parents can give them tips, which is an interesting way to approach it. I hadn't thought of. However, on the other side, someone said it takes away the fun of the game and may upset the players. Another reader was in agreement there and said no, because it could put the kids off the game.
So lots of opinions on this one. And don't forget, if you've got an opinion on our city versus countryside debate, you can share your views right now. Go to theweekjunior.co.uk/polls and make your opinion count. Now, before we say goodbye, we've got to do that real or rubbish story some justice, haven't we? So Fred, can you remind me what the story was this week?
So this week, the story was that pigeons can think like robots.
So first of all, before we do this, I feel I should give a shout out to my Uncle Colin, because I'll make him listen to this and he'll be shouting right now because I'm sure he has the answer to this. The problem I have is because of my inside intel with my Uncle Colin's pigeons, I know the pigeons seem so distracted. He has a disco ball outside the loft, which distracts them.
This and is then, getting so much odder than I was expecting.
And there's like, there's scarecrows and gnomes to distract the right birds, but keep the pigeons in. And you know, he goes to look after them and he talks to them. And I'm so confused as to whether that means pigeons are clever or not. I genuinely do not know.
I'm easily distracted here, but I'm just thinking that we should do an all about feature, all about pigeons. I'd never really given them that much thought, but the disco ball and the gnomes, they've won it for me.
Honestly, they've got their own world down in the bottom of that garden, and that's why I'm confused here. So Fred, I need to decide whether pigeons have robotic AI-related minds, yeah?
Correct.
Oh, man, you know what? Just because I think pigeons are more intelligent than we give them credit for, I'm going to say they are mini robots in waiting, and birds and pigeons and robots are all the same. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say the story is real.
Well, Bex, I never doubted you, and you're absolutely spot on. It is real, which is wonderful news, I think, that our pigeon friends aren't perhaps as dumb as we might have thought.
Next time you see a pigeon, look it in the eye. Don't do that. But just be aware that, they're more intelligent than we realise. Phew, on behalf of pigeon fanciers everywhere, I am relieved. I'm not going to lie to you.
Uncle Colin's going to be thrilled.
He'll be delighted. He'll be very, very happy with himself and getting a shout out.
Yeah.
And remember to never look a pigeon in the eye.
Never look a pigeon. No, don't take that advice.
What would happen if you did?
They'd probably fly away. They'd fly back
bad
home.
Bad things.
I think Fred's done it before, but the side of things.
I won't do it.
Well, that is it for this episode of the Week Junior Show. We've learned so much, including don't look a pigeon in the eye. Big thank you to Vanessa and to Fred as well. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe or follow us wherever it is you get your pods from. Tune in next week where we'll be joined by some new guests for the Week Junior team for some great stories, some debates and of course some chat. See you then. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, which is made by the same people that make The Week Junior magazine. You can get 6 free issues of The Week Junior or 3 issues of The Week Junior Science and Nature for £5 by heading to theweekjunior.co.uk/podcast offer.